For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Well, you guys, I'm going to step out for a moment. So I'm just going to let you guys go into Erie as the Seawolves had a really interesting homestand, by the way. They lost power yesterday again. Oh, they lost power twice during the week.
Yeah.
And I felt bad for them because they were having opening day. They lost power opening day. The salesperson who was doing all the merch, she had to do everything by hand, literally, put all the orders in at the end of the night and just manually go about the whole thing. And then during the broadcast was down for a minute. It was all hell broke loose in Erie this week, but they finished 3-2 again. This is a team and they're in first place. It's a veteran laced team. And this is a team that's doesn't have the offense. But I'll let Chris get into that while I step away for just a moment.
All right.
Yeah, that was a pretty good summation there. I did, when they lost power, they were getting Hawkeye pitch classification, but it was like two pitches behind, and then they had no idea of location and speeds and stuff like that. So it was tough out there. But yeah, we've talked about it. It's a lot of veterans on this team, not a lot in the way of what we would consider prospects. But they pitch pretty well. And they're just kind of scrappy. You know, Gage Workman had a huge 3-run homer over the course of the week. I didn't put him in there, but they were down 6-3, and I think he tied it with a 3-run homer, which is, this is his third season in Erie, so he's seen just about everything you can see up there.
Yeah.
But, Brady Allen was kind of one of the interesting guys we wanted to see this year because he was a power bat down in West Michigan. And he's off to a slow start, but he found his extra base power this week. He's still striking out a fair amount, and I do wonder if that's going to be an issue. But got his first home run, hit a pair of triples,
yeah,
and a double, which is nice to see.
Kind of seems like he does a lot of things right out there too. Like he's just like pretty solid at everything. You know, like the type of guy who might end up coaching someday because he's just very rock solid. You don't see him, make too many mistakes. You don't see him give away too many at bats either.
Yeah,
he's not quite talented enough, probably. But
he's a very solid outfielder.
Yeah.
And he's a very good defender, even though he has the curse of being a right-handed hitter and a left-handed thrower. But good defender, and so he's a nice piece up there. But again, he and Chris Myers are really your two big power bats there. And I have Myers down there. Myers went 1-for-13, so if he's not hitting home runs and Allen's not hitting home runs, it's kind of tough for them to scratch off runs. We've already seen them get a little bit more aggressive this year, stealing more bases.
Yeah, you got a couple decent hitters and like Cruz, and obviously Howie Lee is the one sort of prospect hitter who's still there. But not that much threat, but maybe enough like veteran talent there to score enough runs. And the rotation is pretty good. They do have the pitching. So
yeah,
we saw Steven Scott, the left-handed hitting catcher that they claimed from Boston, hit a home run right after Allen. Yeah, so he had two this weekend. So, if you put a bunch of 25-year-old dudes into AA, oftentimes they'll perform pretty well, even if it doesn't mean something, at the major league level. They'll just be the guys that we're getting, questions about constantly. Like, is this guy going to be getting – no, I'm sorry.
That was Quincy Napoli a couple of years ago. And won the MVP, hit 31 bombs or whatever. I mean, it was – he was basically had mastered AA hitting, but that was apparently kind of his ceiling.
Yeah.
So Scott has been a pleasant surprise there, and Alfonso has been nice. They're not, I don't think they're the most gifted defensive tandem behind the plate, but that's what they have here at this level. So,
yeah, I haven't really seen Scott that much behind the plate, just a little bit. So I don't have too much to say yet. I don't know.
Yeah, it was fine. I saw a couple, I know he's played other positions too, and there were just a couple times where he just dropped the ball didn't catch it completely, which you kind of take that for granted when you see MLB catchers catch every single pitch, unless it's 10 feet over their head. But in the minors you still see guys, and we'll get to that with Jose Briseño. I guess we could go to that pitching because it's an awfully fun rotation. We Jackson Jobe, of course, is the big name that, that everybody talks about. And you can see his start, both of his starts, if you go to our YouTube page. And, you know, the stuff is obvious. It's always been obvious, at least the last year or so. It's just he's still dialing in his control right now. And I think he's finding that that double-A hitters aren't quite as likely to chase.
Yeah.
And he also got squeezed a bit by the ump. Something Raj and I were talking about today is if you watch these minor league umps, they miss a lot of actual strikes.
Yeah, and then you go to the catching as well. I mean, like all those issues, you know. I mean, if again, like if you put Jobe, you know, in a major league context right now, he'd probably have some struggles as well because there's still some control issues to work through. But you know, it would look a lot better. You know, it's always something you have to keep in mind down there. You know, he hasn't really pitched that much is the other thing. Yeah. Just the way the Tigers are using kind of all their prospect pitchers, these little short, you know, short outings. I don't know. It's probably just going to be a little bit for them to get into rhythm because he dominated the first couple innings and looked great. And then, you know, just kind of lost the plot and started throwing it around a little bit.
Yeah. And there was one, I think it was that third inning where he got really squeezed on a bat. Like he thought he'd struck the dude out and he did, I think. Was a slider over the heart of the plate, and I guess the ump ruled it high, and then it kind of unraveled there. And that's stuff you'll see in the minors. I'm not concerned about the walks. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue going forward. I think maybe the command was a little overblown last year. I think he threw a lot of strikes, but it, you know, I don't think he's Greg Maddux.
Yeah, it was control. He threw a lot of strikes, but yeah, you know, still not necessarily like locating the fastball to both sides of the plate, setting people up. Yeah. There's those detailed things he needs to learn and to use how to, you know, to work over different hitters, mix different sequences together. So there's things to work on. Even if you called him up right now, he might be, you know, a fifth starter, fourth starter somewhere, but you don't want him to come up and be a fourth starter. You want him to come up 100% ready to go. So,
yeah. And we'll say, like, you know, I imagine he'll get locked in here over the next 4 weeks or so, and then we'll be in for a treat. But, The you know, I alluded earlier about how Dylan Dingler is kind of frustratingly inconsistent, and Ty Madden is that pitcher for me in this system. Yeah. I swear every year he comes out and dominates in his first start, and then it's just average kind of mess stuff. Like he and to a lesser extent Keider Montero will have these spells where they just lose the zone for like two to three batters out for no apparent reason. And then they get themselves in trouble. Now, Montero is getting better at that and doesn't get, you know, has been able to limit damage. But for Madden, it still snowballs on him. And then he'll, you know, come back out and pitch two, three more solid innings. But it's been frustrating. And, you know, this is his, you know, he spent all of last year in Double-A.
Kind of like part of people might see from Joey.
Yeah, Joey Wentz. That's a good call. Yeah, just not enough quality strikes when you need them. And just out of nowhere, like I said, he'll strike out two guys in a row, and then the next batter it's four straight balls, and you're like, what happened?
It's strange. Yeah, it just goes haywire, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, with Wentz, I've always just been like, well, he's long legged, you know.
Yeah,
hard to get all that crane and everything, you know, lined up right. But yeah, Madden, like, God, when he's going good, I mean, that slider is so goddamn nasty, and you know, he's just pumping 97, 98 in there with better ride than he had, you know, a year or two ago, and it looks pretty good, but there's just, I don't know, there's just that third element kind of missing there. And sometimes it's command, and sometimes it's not really having a third pitch that he's that comfortable with some days. Yeah. You know, you see days when he kind of starts to lean into the cutter again. That's, you know, you'd like that to work out, but that always seems like a sign that it's not going well to me. Like he's starting to feel for something. He doesn't trust something. And then, yeah, he starts trying to just mix all this other stuff in, throws himself out of whack, but. You know, that's the hard part of getting better at pitching. It's just there's so much precision involved.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a heck of an arm, and you still hold out hope. You know, it's I'm not to say that I'm like super down on him or anything like that. It's just it's been kind of frustrating. It's been slower than you'd hope. Now Troy Melton, Raj was there for that start. I don't know if Raj is lurking in the background and wants to talk about it, but he was. It was interesting. We went and saw his first start in West Michigan last year, and it was kind of similar where it seemed like he was just a little amped up and was losing the zone a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he almost had to come out of this game in the third inning. Like he was like three pitches away from having to come out, and then he got a double play and then got like a two pitch pop out and was able to come back out in the fourth and had a really nice fourth. So that was something you like to see. And Rogelio had you know, video of him talking after the game, and he seems like a super fun, gregarious kid that I'm hoping we can get on the show one of these days, because I like his attitude, and he just seems fun. So,
and he knows a lot about what he's doing. You know, I can't remember if it was Seidel or Evan Petzl, but one of them had a really good interview with him, you know, in spring camp, just him talking about how much he'd learned, you know, how raw he was coming out of college. And if anyone wants to see like how far Troy Melton has gone and why, and part of why we're so high on him, you know, just go back and look at like his mechanics in his last year of college and where he is now. He's just absolutely transformed into a completely different human being as a pitcher. And seems to really, like enjoy the process of pitch design and understanding his mechanics and, you know, everything that goes into developing your body to pitch well and locate and be durable. So he was a really good interview, and I'm sure if you guys had a chance to talk to him, it'd be a really fun conversation. I'm stoked about that dude just because he's coming along so fast, and the stuff is electric when he's on. Probably the second best in the system, at least in my mind, to Job. So I'm a big Melton believer, but again, early season, minor leagues, chilly weather.
Just you want him to stay healthy and. Yeah. We were talking, somebody was yelling about, the Tigers doing this with their pitchers, with their, you know, four innings here, three innings, not stretching them out. And I get it. But at the same time, we don't have a huge track record to say this is working or it isn't working. But they didn't really lose any of their big pitchers last year. And this year it's basically Tyler Madison, who is a reliever. And that's a different animal altogether.
Yep. Sawyer, Gibson, Long. But
we don't know.
But you look at the injuries all these other teams are having. I mean, there's panic on the internet all over the place that, you know, some new epidemic is breaking out. That doesn't actually seem to be the case. But, I mean, it's pretty hard to yell at the Tigers for trying to do something different. I don't know how we haven't ever had a long conversation about, like, why pitcher injuries are up and gone into that whole topic. But, you know, I mean, by and large, I'm of the mind that most of the problem comes before guys are, like, 20. Once you get to this level, you gotta air it out. You gotta do everything you can to be the best pitcher you can. And if, you know, slow playing these guys through April so that they can go 5 months and turn them loose to throw 80, 90 pitches, hopefully, maybe they won't do that. I don't know, but 80, 90 pitches an outing, you know, whatever it takes. I thought, you know, like some of the ones that are weird to me are like Colin Fields, he pitched on Tuesday against Quad Cities.
Yeah, and had, I think he struck out the first six batters he faced.
Just went off and struck out eight, and then came back on Sunday against them. And maybe they just didn't want him to face the same team again for a longer outing, but only went two innings and, you know, didn't give up any runs and struck out four and still looked pretty good. So it's kind of interesting to sort of try to puzzle out what they're thinking exactly, but. You got to try something different.
They were doing that last year as well. So anytime that somebody got two starts in a week, they would limit them in the second start.
Okay,
It may be later in the season. It may be like, you know, 6-3 or something like that. But and they talk about the amount of ups they want guys to do, you know, like, you know, how many times they get up. And that they must have lots of, you know, research that suggests, like, you know, getting ramped back up for each inning adds a little bit more stress, and you want to limit that. And I don't know. I mean, this is their jobs and their livelihoods, and I don't have an issue with them doing it. It makes these early games kind of tough for the managers, I think, and it puts a lot of stress on the bullpen. But it does, you know, we know that for years they've been limiting guys to their total inning totals. Mm-hmm. Total inning totals. And the way they do it this way is you're ramping them up, and then they're still available if you make a playoff run like Erie did last year, and it's nice.
You want them to be, you know, the beginning of the year is the least important. So, you want them healthy when guys have played a whole season, all the hitters are dialed in, people are moving up levels, you know, and maybe you're getting toward some kind of a playoff run. Not that they care that, I assume this isn't like a Dave Littlefield thing where they really want to win, you know, the Eastern League title, but, you know, you do, you're that's what you're there for. You got to have some kind of a goal at the end of the season.
Yeah, we talked about that with, I think we talked with Garko about that, and it's, you're not, like, your goal isn't to go out there and win the Eastern League Championship, right? Like, they're not going to hold prospects. Like, they sent Bigby up at the end of last year, like,
And Dingler,
But if you want your players to experience that. You want them to play for something. You want them to feel the playoff, the tension, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
And I think
and to learn how to like kind of bond together as a team and like sort of, you know, figure out how to be a good teammate and, you know, in that kind of context for sure.
Yeah. So, but we, you know, we kind of bogged down here, but we could talk, you know, Will Kell, he was a guy that got bumped up to double A. I wasn't expecting that. And so far he's holding his own. He doesn't really have swing and miss stuff, but he's got velocity and he's thrown enough strikes. So that's solid to see. Mm-hmm. Tim Naughton, Roger, didn't you say Tim Naughton was touching 96, 97, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Naughton looked pretty good, actually, when I was out there I think I saw him opening night or Wednesday. I can't remember, but I did see him for an extended period of time.
Right on. And, all right. You guys take it over for a second. I'm going to go take a break.
All right. No problem.
Did you answer the question about Lee there, by the way?
I'm sorry. I missed that about what his.
If he is considered to be a full time player. You know, that's a great question, and I think, and I did an article about Lee when I saw him out there doing a live look. He's hunting fastballs. He's making a pretty good adjustment from high A. Is he going to be a full-time player? I think he has enough ability to do so. I think he's, correct for mine, I think he's younger, he's one of the younger players in,
I want to say he's 20, correct? 21?
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you would say that there's anything about him that's plus. Like, I don't know if he has a plus tool, but he may be above average as a, you know, as a hitter down the road, which is the key. Let's see, how old is he? 21. Yeah, turned 21 in February. But yeah, I think he could be an average second baseman down the road. I mean, they're playing him in multiple positions right now. I think second base is probably his best position, but he's. You know, I was a little bit worried. His first series, he didn't take any walks, but then he came out this week and walked more than he struck out. And I think the power ceiling, I don't know. It depends on how much he, you know, hunts power, how much he pulls the ball. But I think, yeah, there's a potential average second baseman there. It's, you know, he just needs to continue growing as a player.
Yeah. I mean, he shows a pretty good range of the field, too. Somebody was asking this about my thoughts about Troy Melton's appearance or Troy Melton's first double A start. Outside of not having command of his slider, I thought he did a pretty good job with this fastball. That's got huge hands, by the way. He shook everybody's hand before the media were going down there and shook his hand. I was like, just massively took over my hand. But no, he's got a very kind of like Bo Brisky in a sense that he's cool and under pressure kind of vein and under pressure with that. And so, but yeah, he even said, like, look, I didn't have command away from righties, and he got away with a couple pitches where Binghamton really just made solid contact, but they somehow stay in the ballpark. And I think in the summertime they would have been gone. But overall, pretty solid debut.
Yeah, and like you said, he knew exactly what his issue was, and he didn't. Yeah. I don't know if he necessarily knew, like, you know, why that was the issue, but he knew what he needed to fix. The only one I wanted to mention, Lyle Lockhart there. I just kind of say this jokingly. He came in relief in one of those games and gave up three runs. And I don't know, like, what is that old saying? Like, never do a crap job well, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, his numbers out of the bullpen last year, 7.98 ERA. As a starter, 2.28. So I just think, for whatever reason, relief doesn't suit him as much as starting. So, so yeah, I'm sure that he might lobby for more starts in the future.
All right, let's move on to West Michigan and a pretty good week. Again, I say that in some way in terms of like the pitching wise, offensively speaking, this is a team that's going to be, especially when you look at Isaac Pacheco's numbers, 2-for-20 on the week, 10 strikeouts, no walks. But a friend of the show, I know Stan's a big fan of Steph Stevenson. Had a pretty good week. Max Anderson, who we just had, Zeke out there. Thank you, by the way, great job though, Zeke and Zeke Jennings for going out there and doing an interview with them, and it took time. And also give props to Lynn, who is the new director of marketing out there at West Michigan. She's done a fantastic job. Thank you, Lynn, for being so accommodating. And also want to give some props to, we had a gentleman taking pictures for us over the weekend. Gavin Parm, I got your pictures and I will be putting them up. Thank you. I just have not had a chance to properly thank you. And also props to, I got to just that earring before I forget, Mike Goleski, who is a who's the Erie's photographer, does fantastic work. I mean, I'm just, if you see some of his stuff with, I showed a troll, I think I showed you the Troy Melton picture earlier, right, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's he does a really good job. So if, we'll give you guys the accounts to follow them on Twitter. But either way, West Michigan, again, Jaden Ham, the Jaden Ham show on Saturday, went out there. There's a couple pitches he got away with that he hung up, but overall looked really good. No walks, 3 hits, 1 run, 7 strikeouts. And Dylan Smith struggling with command a little bit, but a guy that I got to watch a little bit today was Carlos Mercado. And Brandon, I wanted to get your thoughts on guys like Mercado, who he may not get a lot of strikeouts, but perhaps offer that org feel to him, but they seem like there's something interesting with him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young enough to kind of see if maybe he can build up a little more velo and become a little bit of a Foley-ish type reliever, perhaps. Something along those lines. He does get a fair amount of ground balls. I haven't watched him a ton because, yeah, the strikeout totals don't pop, and I'm kind of scouting based on the stat line at least, and then going and looking at guys a lot. So I haven't seen him a lot, but you know, there's at least potential there to be some kind of a depth starter type guy, and possibly like a middle reliever. The slider's not bad. I don't really have a good feel about his changeup. I don't know. Have you guys seen him throw a lot? I haven't seen him throw that many times, but you know, he at least looks like the sinker is like a quality pitch. And I have a lot more faith these days in the Tigers, like building a dude up, you know, physically to get the most out of that. If you can throw that pitch, you know, you can go a long way with just that. And then it's just a question of whether or not he can command it and build up the secondary stuff a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I found his, I actually haven't watched him yet this year, but I watched him a couple times last year. He seemed to always be pitching against Bradenton in St. Lucie. and I thought it was a usable changeup. Like it's a pitch that he feels comfortable throwing. And so he's got the 3 pitches he needs, and I guess 4, he's mostly a sinker guy, but I think he'll toss in a 4-seamer every now and then.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, he doesn't spin it like Kiter did back in the day, but I don't know. There may be more in the tank down the road. It just, you feel like he's physically maxed out already. He's kind of he's a shorter guy, but yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean he can't find more velo down the road. And I think he's like 92, 94. So I don't know, he's an interesting name. He's very young. So just a guy to keep an eye on. I don't know.
He's in the interesting bin, yeah, sort of, like, yeah, not really a prospect yet, but somebody, yeah, to keep an eye on. I kind of have Fields in that too, you know, doesn't throw very hard, but has some interesting spin rates and a kind of a weird cutter that looks like it could actually be a real cut fastball, but yeah, you know, not overpowering in any way yet. So
I think, yeah, I think if we expanded our list to 50 guys, that they would probably both be on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I just, from watching West Michigan this week, it was, they were getting no hit like a bunch. Like there was like, oh boy, no hits. One game didn't get a hit until the ninth inning, I think, or seventh inning. But
I was gonna say Zeke's in the chat too. I was just wondering what he thought of thought about the offense while he was out there. As you were, continue. I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
Oh, nothing. Yeah, I mean, I think we could talk about Jaden Ham again. You put that video up earlier. I saw it. It was it's fun to watch. We were joking about like, he and Melton have like the diametrically opposed arm path. Melton is the real short arm, and Ham just has this super long arm path. But I like the fastball, I like the changeup, like the breaking ball. I think we talked earlier, I like his fastball up quite a bit. I feel like when he throws it down, it gets hit hard. And I don't know if they can fix that with a sinker or what they can do there, or maybe he just needs more velo. But otherwise, I mean, he looks like a fun, effective pitcher, and definitely a guy I think we talked to that he's going to be on our next top 30 for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, pretty huge ride on the fastball, you know, the 20 IVB thing that was it Baseball America keeps posting. Mm-hmm. That's huge induced vertical break numbers right there. So yeah, he can definitely live at the top of the zone with the 4-seamer. And he looks like a guy whose mechanics could still be worked out a little bit and tightened up. And he's not, you know, he's not a big guy. What is he? 6'1".
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Like he seems to get pretty good extension already, which is going to help him. You'd kind of like to see him drive down the mound a little bit. There's maybe a little bit more like leg buildup to be done here. He's kind of a rail, but
I was gonna say probably maybe a little more muscle, because that was one thing that I was talking to Jeff Pontes about from Baseball America, is if he can get a little more velocity as fastball, that will, I mean, he'd be elite pitcher that way. And maybe that's something that comes. By the way, that was a bad route by Roberto Campos on that ball. I'm sorry. That was just route there by Campos. But yeah, there's what I like about him too. And this is what I was talking about earlier with his curveball. The thing is, he kind of breaks. Sometimes I get hung up, and it just he can get hammered. And there was a couple times against Quad Cities has got a couple guys too that can hit the ball barrel pretty well. That was a good pitch right there. It looks like a. Gosh, was that the slider? Or the slurvy?
I think that was more the slurvy curve, and then the slider is sort of a short one.
Yeah. See, and then just the way he can spot that fastball away, he's got some good riding action. But yeah, it was fun to cut the start, because it was just, he also is a very, like, his mechanics are very repeatable, very efficient with his mechanics. And that's something like he doesn't, you know, there's no wasted motion. You know what I mean? Like, it's just everything that comes together when he,
yeah, there's no over rotation. There's no sort of like, you know, things going in different directions. He's lined up and driving straight at the plate pretty well, pretty clean. I mean, will the Tigers like shorten that arm action the way they did with Melton? I don't know it seems like they probably would have already like started him out working on that this offseason if they were going to make a concerted effort to do that. So maybe they'll kind of just go with it. I kind of think like the shorter arm stroke actually gives you more deception personally. I saw someone in the comments kind of feeling the other way. It sort of depends on your mechanics and like how closed off you are to home plate as you're driving and stuff like that. But I don't know. There's definitely a lot of raw material there. He just looks like really like a really good young college pitcher, like brand new. So yeah, with plenty of potential, like pretty consistent, you know, and yeah, when you can ride it in there with that much induced vertical break, you definitely have something to start with. And he can spin the breaking balls. I don't have his spin rates, but they look like he can kind of yak that thing a little bit. So, yeah, plenty of raw material there. He's definitely a guy that's going to be popping up on the list here whenever people get around to doing their like mid-season updates. Did you guys see Dylan Smith, by the way? I mean, we kind of mentioned him, but is he throwing harder? Because I did see that one outing in the Arizona Fall League, or maybe it was two outings, where he touched 98 a couple times. And, you know, I've been kind of waiting for them to, like, develop him physically a little bit more. But
I thought Donald Lakewood was, like, 94, 95 from
yeah,
what I was hearing. That's usually where he is, but there was that one outing where late last fall he was really airing it out, and he was wild, too. So I don't know if he was just trying to throw his hardest. I'm not exactly sure what the plan development-wise was there in the Fall League, but I haven't quite given up on him yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I actually didn't dig into either of his starts. I was starting to, and then I kind of got sidetracked. But it still seems to be like there's some solid raw stuff there. You like the slider. He's got the separate curve. He's a guy that seems to he also will occasionally run into some control issues and then uncork a wild pitch or two and then gets himself into some trouble. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if he might not be a pretty solid relief arm down the road, if they want to go that route with him, because I do think the stuff is there to do it.
Yeah. And after, you know, kind of just being banged up last year, not really even anything that specific, just arm fatigue and things like that. You know, this is probably kind of a big year for him to see if he can stay as a starter and develop a little bit. Otherwise, yeah, maybe we'll see them push him into Wilmer territory. I assume Wilmer's being converted full time. Looks like it. So
we have Ham's spin rates from last year. We have from his brief period in Lakeland. If you want his four seamer was average 2420.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And the curve was 2656. And change up 1628. So nice and low.
Yeah, that's good.
So there you go.
Right on. Okay, plenty to work with there. A lot of raw material. What was he, the fifth rounder last year?
I believe he was. Yeah. So yeah, it was Clark, McGonigal, Anderson, Wilson, Rucker,
yeah,
okay. Ham,
yeah, out of Middle Tennessee State,
I believe. Middle Tennessee State, yeah. In my head, it's always Memphis for some reason, but I think you're right. I think it's Middle Tennessee State. I guess Memphis is kind of in the middle of Tennessee, isn't it? maybe not. I don't know. My Tennessee geography is not.
I don't. Yeah, I think Memphis is over by the river. Walking to Memphis, right? I don't know. Jeff Buckley died in Memphis, I think, didn't he?
Is that the Mississippi?
I think so.
You're right. Yeah, that looks that's very not very much not the middle of Memphis, Tennessee. Anyway,
I was being gentle.
Yeah, I've never been to. I drove through Tennessee once. Yeah, so then we have the Flying Tigers, who are one of the more enjoyable teams this year. Not just because they have last year's first overall pick, but there's a lot of fun stuff going on there, and they crushed it last week. They swept. I think it's called a mopping, right? When you win more than I think a 4-game sweep is called a mop. So I don't know what a 6-game sweep is. That's like a Swiffer.
Yeah.
It was. I don't. Raj wanted to talk about Pat Caputo's. I don't know if it was an article or podcast where he was talking about Max Clark overwhelmed by low A pitching.
And, maybe we can wait for Max Clark till Raj gets back.
And we'll
Okay.
Because
there's a lot.
Oh.
There was a lot that went on. We had the Kiwi Crusher out there, Clayton Campbell hitting bombs. Yeah. Jose De La Cruz hitting two absolute nukes. Yeah. A lot of fun stuff like that. And then the actual prospects, you know.
Yeah, last I checked, De La Cruz had the two hardest home runs hit in the Florida State League so far this year. One was 110.9, the other one was 112, and they were both 430, or one was 410, the other one was 430. But
he just had some little better hands and discipline. Son of a bitch.
and that's the, Clayton Campbell, when you see him hit the ball, you're like, hey, this might work. Because he really turned on a ball. He's got three home runs right now, I think, which is leading the league. I can't help, but in this is probably just me, my Oceania bias. But I can't help but think of somebody like Ulrich Boyarski, who could crush low A hitting too, or pitching too. Had that big power, but couldn't quite do anything else, with the bat.
And Campbell consistently at 30% plus strikeout rates. But every once in a while, you get that 108 mile per hour missile somewhere.
And he was an absolute extra base hit machine in the complex league last year. I think he had like 16 doubles, and I want to say he had like 20 extra base hits in 30 games or something wild like that. He adds some scary thump to that lineup, which is kind of fun. Just thinking in like, for Andrew Graham's world, like,
Florida State League context. Yeah.
I think the guys, obviously, everybody wants to talk about Clark, but I think everybody else is super excited about Josue Briseño, and they have a right to be. There's a lot of fun stuff going on there. It is kind of hilarious that like every single ball he puts in the plate, unless it's a pop up, everything he hits is like 98 to 107 miles an hour, and it'll be like, oh, that's a weak ground out. Nope, 104. I'm like, what? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, he's just got those forearms and wrists, baby. Yeah. Everything is just smashed. Pretty good discipline too, at least for that level, So. Maybe that I kind of equate that kind of discipline to like control over command for hitters, but you got to see him against a lot better pitching than that. It doesn't seem like there's much else for him to learn down there offensively, at least. I assume that he's down there to keep working on his catching and keep getting put through the ringer there. And, we can talk about that a little bit. He did throw out a couple runners this weekend. That was kind of nice to see. Looked pretty good. He's not quick. He's not, he's not going to have probably explosive pop times, but, I just want him to be like that dude who could be like your backup catcher. If you actually had a good everyday catcher and then can play some first base and just be sort of your V-Mart would be my sort of ideal Briseño outcome, something like that. Well, all right. Brick Bear Martinez is a little bit like shooting for the moon, but you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. Like you said, I do think it's average to above average arm strength. I caught both those pop times at right around 2 seconds. I think is kind of a slower release, but I think the raw arm strength kind of makes up for it. That part works. I think he's fairly agile for a guy that size. He's not real Muto or anything like that, but. The only thing that I've noticed so far is the hands just might not quite be there.
The 1-1 pitch, Castillo goes. Briseño pops out of the crowd.
Just a dart.
And his throws were accurate. Both of the times they ran on him, he was.
You can tell he's been working on getting it more overhand, too, to take the tail off of it. And you see it on both of those, so that's good. Maybe hands won't matter anymore, Chris. Bring us the automated ball strike system. I'm sick of framing.
It does still
these guys in their soft, buttery hands.
He does occasionally have the ball pop out of his glove too, which is but again, I've talked about it before and you touched on it. Like the approach is good enough. He did strike out swinging yesterday, which was shocking to me. I think he walked twice this week and struck out once. He really doesn't chase very often. And
seems like he takes some pitches in the zone too that he doesn't like already, you know, which is another thing. It's sort of like, yeah, it's a little bit advanced for that level for sure.
And that swing was like a golf swing too. He barreled it. I mean, the way he put his hands on that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was a 3-1 pitch, and I think it was it was a splitter or a change, I think, that was at the bottom of the zone. But he was just, you know, I don't know if he was sitting on it or was just about to swing it, whatever, came at 3-1. And I mean, that was a low line drive, like 19 degree launch angle, but he hit it out because he's so strong. And he's had a couple deep fly balls that, you know, one should have been a double, but it was kind of screwed up by some base running. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's the ultimate question is how much power is he going to produce? I mean, you would think that he's got plenty in the tank, but you never know with guys that hit the ball this hard. Like sometimes they're Yandy Diaz.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly a really exciting player. And like, I watch all these games and I'm like, you're eager to get Max Clark and clip him. And then I have to hurry up and stop and go back and make sure that Briseño didn't do something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fun to watch, but it's a little bit tough if you're trying to get clips up with the internet.
I mean, we're not used to that much going on at Lakeland sometimes either, you know, and then you got McDonald's
or having cameras.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know. And like all the
stuff. Or having a broadcaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe doing a pretty nice chat. What is it? Puccio?
Puccio, yeah. Think of The Simpsons with Pucci and
yeah, yep. It was also, I mean, here's a guy who also had a good week too, Clayton Campbell. I got both of his home runs.
Clayton Campbell.
We were just talking about him. Yeah. The Kiwi crusher.
Yeah. His swing just like almost straight up upright, the way they had the bat is just man.
Yeah, I mean, he whipped it through the zone. I mean, that was nice and clean right there. It's just
he's only 20 too, right?
He's
IFA out of New Zealand 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, and he's another you know, catcher, first baseman. I don't know if he's playing third base at all anymore, but
him hit ball hard and we find
on their feet, dance.
Yeah, well, they'll figure out something for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, he's hitting the ball hard and we've seen a lot of that. He's a Jose De La Cruz we were talking about earlier, just two absolute moonshots.
Five game hitting streak too.
Yeah, you hold out hope. You got to get those strikeouts down, at this point, it's just kind of fun to watch him hit the ball hard. I think, and it was interesting. You know, Dom Johnson had that 1-4-4 game with two home runs.
Yeah, that was fun.
And then Christian Santana had a very Christian Santana week. 2-for-13. The only two hits were extra base hits, and then he walked more than he struck out.
He's an interesting hitter, man.
Yeah, here's Dom Johnson home run. This was this was a second home run here.
Yeah, this is the game that got out of hand and they called, I think, in the seventh inning because of the rain. Yeah. But
crushed that one.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a guy that I really,
for a small guy,
You don't really think about power with him. You know, he's a very fast guy and he had his chance up in high A last year and didn't go great, but maybe, you know, he's made some adjustments and can do a little something this year. And then
here's Christian Santana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if he could just forge Dom Johnson and Seth Stevenson into, like, one high-powered version of that, I'd love it. Seth Stevenson's going to be a lot of fun to watch at West Michigan leading off if the rest of those guys can at least do enough to get him in. Because he's electric out there, but it's kind of all on Max Anderson's shoulders there at West Michigan right now.
Wow. So we were just talking about the White Sox earlier on the podcast on the Motor City Metrics when we did a podcast earlier. I said the White Sox got shut out five times. Now it's been six times since the 1907 Dodgers.
Oh, wow.
You know what? I didn't remember until my buddy Rob told me they can't have a top 10 pick next year.
Oh, that's right.
They're going to have the worst record in baseball and not a top 10 pick because they've had them the last 2 years because their market, they can't get it anymore. So,
I mean, you know what, though? I mean, really.
A feat not accomplished since the 1907 Dodgers of Elmer Stricklett and Whitey Alperman. I mean, you know, somebody said, who was it? One of our, I think it was the Bleed Cubby Blue, manager at SB Nation was talking about that might be the worst team, the worst White Sox team of all time, might be the worst team of all time. And, you know, I've got the Tigers in my head from, yeah. yeah, like, no, there's no chance. You've at least got Garrett Crochet, but then yeah, I mean, you've got Luis Robert down, you've got
the
Moncada's out. It's a mess.
Yeah, but and
106 miles to Chicago. Got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
So, the thing about that too is that the projected number one pick in 2025 is Ethan Holliday, who was supposed to be better than. So
can we hire Max Holliday to raise children in the Detroit area and nice. Turn them into ball players?
Just put him as a bull, like, you know.
Can
like
he adopt Christopher? Let him adopt Christopher Cabrera.
Or just like use a seed, like he's just like a bull, you know. You put him out the pastures, just producing baseball talent.
So,
yeah, a prize stallion, that Matt Holliday. Damn it,
ladies and gentlemen, we've made a Nelson Mandela effect. We put a bull out to steed on this podcast.
See Riley Arthur here asked, "Can you not do back-to-back top 10 picks anymore? You cannot do 3 years in a row, yeah. I believe. I want to say you can't do 2 years in a row if you are like the Nats couldn't last year because of, you know, it involves
its market size, yeah.
Your market size and your payroll.
Yeah, you can't be a lottery team a certain amount of times in a row. It's still the lottery too, of course.
I don't believe the Tigers. I mean, we don't even want to think about it. But yeah, it's too complicated now. But yeah, that's the thing. The Nats actually won the lottery last year, but they couldn't have the first pick, so they end up picking 10th.
Yep.
And so the White Sox won't be able to get Ethan Holliday unless something crazy happens, or whomever else they want at number one. But
so we did get a question about Brady.
Brady Trikonic.
Trikonic, who is out injured with a torn meniscus, I believe.
No, yeah, I think he had the meniscus at the end of last year, and I think he's out with a UCL now. I think he's getting Tommy John.
Ooh.
I think I want to say the last injury report, I thought it was a UCL. I may be mistaken.
Actually, I knew it was at least bad. It was bad enough to write him off for the year anyway.
Yeah, because he's on the full season injured list, which is a bummer. Because yeah. he was a Canadian born JUCO kid who put up monster numbers and was relatively young, and they gave him a pretty big bonus. I want to say they went like 300,000 over slot there in the 14th round or whenever they got him.
Wasn't he like the JUCO player of the year, JUCO hitter of the year, or something like that?
Yeah, it was, I believe, a school out Oklahoma, right? Was it that community college?
Yeah, something.
Yeah. Connor State, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, this was a good... Yeah.
Chris is correct, of course.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Colin, yeah, I was just going to say, we were both at the same time. Did you expect Colt to go through some early struggles at the major league level? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I actually didn't think... I kind of thought it would be more like he just didn't hit for power for a month or two. You know, and maybe would hold his own a little better than he has, but you know, it's whatever. It's what, 17 games or something.
Yeah.
he looks pretty comfortable. He looks like he's settling in. I just still feel like, I think I said this earlier, I'm going to repeat myself, but he just looks like he's got a little bit too much in his head right now and probably should just chill out there and see ball hit ball for a little while. Cause you know, he's just, they try to acclimate them more and more to the kind of scouting reports and the kind of detailed planning that you're going to do at the major league level. So it's not like he hasn't seen all that before, but there is a lot of information to process and everything's new. You know, it just takes a little bit. I'm not concerned about Colt Keith at all. I'm actually kind of thrilled with Colt Keith because his defense has been even better than I hoped so far. And he actually looks faster. And I think there's some proof to suggest that he actually did build some speed this offseason. So like, I don't know. Maybe we should just shut the hell up about, you know, infielders and their defensive abilities till we see them at the major league level. Cause it just feels like, you know, young now him, you know, it's like, you just never know, you know, some guys put the work in and really turn it around and other guys just never will, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch there with Colt Keith. I think it's almost right now that it feels like he's trying too hard to not strike out, if that makes any sense. And so he's trying to put the ball in play and he's not really launching. He's got one extra base hit so far, which is not him. But we predicted this. We talked about every time he's gone up a level, there's been an adjustment period. And this is the biggest jump of all. So it's going to be the longest period of him trying to figure things out. But every time he has figured it out, and he's just a quick learner in that way, that the way that guys can, what you want to see from hitters is they eventually download what the pitchers are trying to do to them and figure out a way to get out of it. And I believe in his ability to do that. But for now, yeah, we knew he was more athletic than he was getting credit for. And I thought, you know, he was faster than people were giving him credit for. I did not expect him to be putting up, you know, he's plus two outts above average. He's plus one DRS. I didn't expect him to be an above average defender.
He's never been like a statue or anything. My concern was, does he have the agility to play around second base? Like when you're taking feeds from Javi Baez, you better be sharp and quick. And for the most part, he's been pretty good. Like there's some little things like getting the ball out of his glove a little faster with the shovel toss. There've been a few times where he's not quite like quick enough and sharp enough to be exactly on time with Baez right now. But it's been better than I expected overall. So yeah, that doesn't seem to be a problem. He's also got, I think, two warning track fly balls. You know, he got Comerica'd, you know, 410 feet away at one point. So, you know, it's not like he hasn't hit anything hard either.
I mean, the one thing that is the reason why I think that Brandon, this is where it helps him, his baseball overall IQ helps him with those kind of like scenarios where he's still getting used to playing second base on a full-time basis.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, if you think about it, he didn't start. I mean, he started the year playing third last year, and I think it was until like halfway through the year. And even then, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, I think he still had some time in at third base between him and Malloy towards the end of the season last year in Toledo. So the fact that he's adjusting this position relatively quickly is, to me, insane. I mean, I expected – The arm is, Chris, you guys both have talked about this. The arm, the third, you know, the way he changed his throw after his surgery was different. And then it just kind of showed that last year from third base, he didn't have that range like he once did. But no, I mean, again, based off the contact, even with him trying to go the opposite way where he says he's trying not to, quote unquote, but then we still see it on, there wasn't that bat last week where it was in the New York series. I really thought that he did a really good job of trying to go to left on that. When he tried to get that double, that was him trying to just take the ball with that. And that's a prime example of a good at bat by a rookie there. And
he really drove that ball. That was a cold, blustery day in New York. I mean, I think I mentioned it earlier, right? Like his batting average is much lower than his expected batting average, just slugging. I went and looked, like if he's walking like 8-9%, striking out under 20%, if you take his expected batting average and expected slugging and keep this walk rate, it equates to like a 115 WRC plus.
Yeah.
That's like, he's at like 33
with plus defense, you know?
Yeah. And that's a 3-4 win player. And that's exactly what everybody hoped he would be. We just need to start. And I think he needs to start seeing that the ball drop. He seems to be a pretty level headed kid and I think he's going to keep grinding through this. And I do think he'll eventually start becoming that hitter that we all hoped he would.
Yeah, and if I you know, like one more little like hint of optimism is just the way he's transformed himself, like every single year, like after year one, it was, oh, where's the power? You know, adds 40 pounds of muscle, starts absolutely, you know, just hitting tanks all over the place. And then, you know, it was okay, but what about the defense? And now we're seeing the defense get addressed and the agility and those other things. So it seems like whenever he focuses on something, he gets it done. And that's a really good sign for him at the plate as well. You know, he's you know, he doesn't look overmatched to me. So I think he'll be fine. I kind of been expecting him to break out like almost every game this, you know, the last weekend. So yeah.
Same here. I keep
it'll come at some point, you know.
Yeah,
he had the big hit in extra innings the other day, but then it just didn't end up being the winner.
Yeah. I mean, the thing you said earlier, it does feel like either he's trying not to strike out, but he's trying to put together good at bats. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down to just trying to hit, you know, there have been pitches that were down that, you know, maybe at AAA last year, he would have just been like, oh, I can crush that, rather than like, oh, I got to take that because I'm at the major league level now. You know, you start learning where you can expand the zone a little bit when you're looking there and all those little details. So,
I mean, it does help too that his agent, I mean, the biggest thing that I took away from the press conference was I didn't realize the kind of relationship he had with his agent, which is like kind of their best friend. Yeah. I used to play for the Dodger system. And so he understand how that ups and downs and all that working on each. Remember when we had him on our interview series, it was him working with Trammell in the Arizona Fall League, trying to work on getting better at fielding because all he was doing was hitting. And he was like, I immediately had to take the field because I felt like I wasn't ready to even take close. And this is the guy who breathes and sleeps the game. And it sounds like a really, really hiss in his ass. But honestly, it's nothing like it's as long as we've been doing this, I just never seen a player just so like just like in, zone in like that. And so for his age and everything. And by the way, Sean, thank you so much for the $3.
Yeah. You know, I'm gonna say I like the suggestion. You know, I'm sure Mark Garage appreciates the O'Neill mention. O'Neill, I would like to have right now, but I'm pretty happy with Flaherty. Like this feels like almost like the worst Jack Flaherty is gonna pitch with the stuff having improved a little bit. So I'm not real concerned about that. I do wish we had another bat, of course, anywhere.
Did you guys see that collision today? The Devers and O'Neill collision? That was brutal.
Busted O'Neill's head open. 8 stitches. Yeah.
Man.
He was bleeding all over the place. It was
Devers was going out to left field and he was coming in and nobody said anything apparently.
It occurs to me that we did not even talk about Max Clark.
Yeah. we were saving that for Raj. This is all scripted. Don't worry.
I did want to mention just briefly the pitching down there in Lakeland because that was pretty good too. You had the Joes, a couple lefties down there, Joe Miller and Joe Adamitz, that were really just kind of toying with the other hitters. And the bullpen has been there have been some walking issues in against Dunedin, but they were pretty strong this week. And Yosmer Sanchez, Thomas Bruss, and yes, Iker Wheezy, my hands down favorite name in the system. And you know what? He's got pretty good stuff.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna have to clip together I think a couple of his innings here soon because you know I don't know if it means much going forward, but he seems like a guy who could be, you know, up in West Michigan, maybe even Erie by the end of the year because the stuff is there. He's throwing 96, 98.
Yeah.
So
you guys want me to go on a tangent about Max Clark or the person that was talking about Max Clark on the air?
Do whatever you gotta do.
Let's talk shoe game. No, all right. Go ahead. Do that first.
All right. Well, here's the thing. So his shoe game, I'm trying to find that picture of him, Max Clark, who
it was Danny Wexelman, I think, was the first person to put it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sound right? That does sound right. Maybe a friend of his or something.
I don't know. So it's one of those things where it was, I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. Well, no, I'll find it here. But let me just say this. Okay. On a shoe, you can find it yourself. You can do that yourself. One shoe said a negative comment. Other shoe said the positive comments. There's a certain person who did a podcast in town, Pac, and basically had said that he couldn't handle high A or single A pitching. Tell me you haven't watched a single game without telling me you haven't watched a single game of minor league baseball in the last couple of years. No offense to Pat. Pat's been in the business for a long time. He's on Fox 2. I'm doing a podcast on YouTube. You know, while my son makes me barbecue. That's what I'm delicious. Doing right now.
But we're more right, yeah.
Yeah, look. Look. And Luke, by the way, good to see you here in the chat, by the way. Nice Jeff Larish reference here. Here's the thing. No, at least when you talk about prospects, at least pretend or even watch them. Actually watch them, okay? But this is the thing that drives me nuts. About this, okay?
We're
all knowledgeable here. I'm in the you guys could easily be in the Baseball Writers Association, no problem, because you have an outlet, an FM outlet that gives you the right to say stupid. No, it shouldn't, because quite frankly, it's dumb. Do the f-ing research and actually pay attention. I'm sorry, I just can't hold back anymore and be polite about this crap. It's driving me nuts. Sorry if I'm swearing. And there's people in here that don't, and normally I normally don't swear, but I just get so frustrated with this stuff because there's guys like that who have the clout and he's been around for a while. And the kid's 19 years old. You say stuff. I know why you're doing it. You're trying to get attention. I get it. You're getting my attention.
Exactly. And that's fine.
You're getting my attention. But this guy, I can't go. I just cannot fathom the fact that here we are when we're trying to get people to, you know, pay attention to the website. It's not just clips. People know we know our stuff, but yet you get overshadowed by a jackass who just, and I'm sorry, that's just a stupid thing to say. And I would say it to his face and I have no problem saying it. I don't care. I'm so sick and tired of
thing to say. But you know, the worst thing is he knows better. Like if Mike Valeni said that stuff, it's just Mike Valeni being Mike Valeni. But Pat Caputo knows that, like, judging an 18-year-old kid by, like, you know, 40 at bats or something like that is the dumbest, least baseball sense thing you could possibly say, but it gets him the clicks. And, you know, I mean,
gets the clicks. I know why he's
there. So,
yeah. And look, and if I wanted to get the clicks,
I don't hate Japan, but suck it.
Yeah. But like, look, I can double down and gone on a rant about how I did last year in the draft. When they drafted Max Clark, originally I was upset, but then I thought about it. I'm like, I'm not giving this kid a chance. Why not I not give this kid a chance? It's not fair to me. It's not fair to him.
I'm still upset about it, but it doesn't have anything to do with Max Clark. You know,
exactly. Like, it has nothing to do with Max Clark.
Don't put that on Max Clark.
Yeah, it's not his fault. But to sit there and you've been watching this team since the 80s. You've had the same spot since the 80s, entrenched yourself. And then, you know, because I don't run the same circles, and I respect his work. I do. I've honestly, but at the same time, it's just, that just drives me nuts, because somehow we have to sit there and we have to prove results over and over and over again. And I'm tired of it. I really am. Walter, all these people that follow us here that watch the show and respect our show. Great. I love our fans. I love the people who stay in and who dedicate to us and who donate to us. I appreciate that. But when I see that hot click, the click, that drives me nuts. Because even a guy like Chris Castanelli, for example, I respect him because his baseball takes, he does his baseball takes, he does his thing. I mean, can he do things for click and make it even worse? Or may not be worse, but make me more clickbaity? Sure, but that's not him. Chris is just being him. But Pat knows better, and that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty gross. I mean,
yeah,
it is whatever. I mean, you can tear yourself up, like, you know, about the whole issue of like establishment media versus, you know, people who actually know what they're talking about.
You guys are in a basement. You guys are in somebody's house. You guys are not on an FM station. If I had an FM station, I would be doing the same as you and doing it better than you. Simple as.
Yeah. I mean, if I wanted to like go back and just like drag the entirety of the entire Detroit beat writing community from 2014 to 2022, you know, and compare them to me, I'll take the Pepsi challenge. But I don't even care about any of that. It's just that, you know, Max Clark, putting Max Clark in that situation and putting the fans in that situation where someone who, you know, who people listen to every day and, you know, and start to think that maybe this is actually the case. Like, Max Clark sucks. Max Clark doesn't care. Yeah. He's a fruitcake. And who has to explain this to people and hear all the crap and like gentle everyone down and bring some sense of reason back to it? And it's always us. So it annoys me on that level, but whatever.
But
Max Clark will be fine.
Yeah, Max Clark will be fine. And the beat writers like McCoskey, all those guys down there, I love them because they're the ones that gave me an opportunity to go down there. And I'm forever grateful for them because they go down there every single day. Every single day, rain or shine, doesn't matter. Jason Beck, Evan, all those guys. I haven't seen Pat at a game. When does Pat go to a fucking game? Sorry. I'm done swearing, I promise.
So
I'm done.
So here's why I kind of throw a monkey wrench in the works. I don't think Pat was wrong. he said Max Clark appears overwhelmed in A-ball by A-ball pitching. And I agreed with him for the first handful of days. Yeah,
I don't know if I'd take overwhelmed, but anyway, go ahead.
So the thing is, and I went and looked, he did absolutely nothing against any kind of velocity. Like every anything above 92 miles an hour was hit on the ground and relatively weakly. He was just late on every fastball.
Yeah,
that happens. That's what's happening with Parker Meadows. It's happening with Spencer Torkelson. And then at the end of this weekend, he was turning on fastballs. He had gotten to that double was 95.9 miles per hour. He lined 100 mile an hour liner to first base on a 96.3 mile an hour pitch. He fixed it. He fixed his timing. It took him less than like 10 games. So he did appear overwhelmed. He doesn't anymore. I think you guys are both right though, that Pat was saying that for no good reason. I was just torn with this because there were going to be clowns who were just going to complain about Max Clark no matter what. And I was trying to not feed into them while also voicing my critiques of what I was seeing.
Right. Because nobody's arguing that he's taken the world by storm. He's been struggling for sure.
And taking some time to adapt.
But, you know, again, it's that short cycle. Like anyone who knows baseball knows that, like, calling out a kid for like, you know, 10 games as overwhelmed. It wasn't even 10 games, too much. It, you know, that's just too much. Like, he's been late on fastballs for a few games. You know, that is the way you accurately say it if you're not just trying to like stir up the hornet's nest, but whatever. Yeah, you know.
And
Raj gets mad about these things.
He wasn't
ambivalent. But yeah.
He's not striking out like 30% of the time. He's taking his walks. He's got a pretty good eye. He's got good defensive ability. He's good fast. There's all sorts of good stuff there. Like I don't know. You know, everybody wants to put that like the Corbin Carroll comp on him, which is not fair. I think I don't know if there is a great one-to-one comp. I was thinking more maybe along the lines of like Pete Crow Armstrong. But I think I don't know, that's tough because Pete Crow Armstrong's main talent is gonna be playing defense in center field, and he's proven that over the years in pro ball, and we just need to see more from Max Clark. And I actually think Max Clark may be more of a on base guy than Pete Crow Armstrong. Pete Crow Armstrong's kind of aggressive, and I don't know if he's going to do much there. Like I said, there's not a great comp, but I don't know. I mean, it's so early. I would say, like, yeah, I don't agree with what Pat was. I think there needed to be more nuance than what he was putting out there.
Yeah. Well, and the other little thing I'll add to it, I guess, in Pat's defense is that Max Clark is the type of kid who is okay making himself the target, or is okay putting himself out there in ways that, you know, like the old heads are always going to be annoyed by. And, you know, maybe that plays into it a little bit as well. But again, like you say, this is all talk, and we're just going to have to see how he works out this year. But it doesn't come back. You know, I wanted Wyatt Langford 100%. And when I saw what had happened with pick one and two, I thought for sure, like I was already like out the door, like, yeah, we got Wyatt Langford. So yeah, I'm in that play, but it doesn't mean that I'm unhappy with Max Clark or that Max Clark sucks or has anything to do with Max Clark. You know, the pick is one thing, and then there's the development, and that's a whole other area. So
what did Max Clark and Wyatt Langford have in common? Neither of them played in Detroit tonight.
Yeah. Let me just say this, and I'm going to say as calm as possible, and I'm just Brandon. The reason, and Chris knows why. The reason why I get mad about this is because
why.
You know, because like the same, it's when even when you work for a site, say like, I don't know, Fansided, where they don't even take your stuff seriously, but you have to write something that's clickbaity.
Of course. Yeah, there's a lot of weak gatekeeping in this industry.
Yeah. 100%. Very, very weird gatekeeping. And I never will understand it. And that's okay. Quite frankly, to sit there and say I don't care is bullshit. I do care. I get mad about it passionately because I feel like we've all earned the right to have some sort of, you know, but it is what it is. And it's no big deal. And like I said, honestly, it's not a big deal because
it's been so long. That's all it is.
Right.
You know? Exactly. I felt the same way 5 or 6 years ago. And I was writing circles around these people about the rebuild, and they're still kind of boosting Alavila and none of them understand StatCast data, have not the faintest clue what they're talking about, and haven't done anything.
Yeah. And that's the. Yeah, but like for example, I've met Luke, I've met Sean, I met some of these people that were in the chat tonight, and they were fantastic people, and the experiences I've had with that, same thing. I've met you through this whole thing. I've met some really good people. I met Mark Gourash, and technically, you're welcome, Mark. That you're now podcasting because of what I've done. Is it not true?
It's 100% true.
But then again, somebody has a job at the Free Press. Guess who doesn't? Not this guy.
I wanted to add one more thing, and that's just that one thing that's been great the last 3 or 4 years, though, is Evan Petzold and Cody Stavenhagen. Like, the beat writing game in town just went through the roof finally, and it was kind of abysmal before that. You know, I love Fennec. You know, there were things that were good about, you know, prior to that, but the whole game has just stepped up so much, and that's really been a pleasure to see. I'm a big fan of Cody's writing. I don't get a chance to listen to the podcast much, but you know, and I listen to Days of Roar occasionally, but as you guys know, when you do this, like, the last thing you want to do is consume a whole lot more of it when you're not the one doing it. It's just the way it goes.
I'm
trying to get away from baseball, like, you know, for that 1 or 2 hours a day, maybe.
So you throw on the Hardcore History podcast.
Yeah.
Or whatever. No, I just wanted to mention that it's been great fun watching Lakeland for these last 2 weeks, and now we get to go a week without seeing them because I don't believe Palm Beach has a broadcast.
Yeah.
But they're on the road for 2 weeks straight. Then they're at Tampa, which does have a broadcast, so just taking a week off.
Yeah.
The question becomes, when is Kevin McGonigal going to come back? Because that's another really fun hitter that we're going to get a chance to see. You know, he's got a bit of a hammy issue. I'm curious if they'll have him go out on any of these road trips. Or if they may just wait until Lakeland is back in town so he can be there at the facility. Or if that's the thing, they don't come back home to play till the 30th, and then the complex league starts like a week later. So maybe they just wait till then and have him play complex ball. But
Seems like they just like let him warm up the complex league pitchers and scare them.
yeah, that would be like fun.
Bullets
like,
off like of them. Just
Paul Wilson, yeah. You know, Blake Nickerson, Jack Diaz. Like, get ready, guys.
But
have a hard time throwing past that kid for now.
It's gonna be it's a fun squad right now. It's just as we said, it'll be interesting to see how long they keep Briseño down there when he ends up with 20 walks and 5 strikeouts.
Deadly ninja bees. Fans better get used to drafting high schoolers. That's the fucking facts right there. You better be ready.
Is Paul Wilson still hurt?
Connor and Metzler are going to draft a lot of high school kids because you just can't find that college talent very easily.
I think he's doing though. I think Paul Wilson is doing though. By the way,
I don't think Paul Wilson was on the injured list on their list of all the injured minor leaguers the other day. Dickerson was with a concussion. We're like, what?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was like, I wonder how that happened. Oh, but maybe he was, in the offseason, he does the slap boxing.
He was pitching to Kevin McGonigal. That's what.
Oh, there you go.
Don't even get me started on slap. That sport's ridiculous.
I made the mistake of showing my son and his friends that yesterday, and I'm like, well, then they were like slapping each other. I'm like, oh boy, I'm going to hear about this from the teacher. Yeah.
Especially when they do the slow mo too, you just see like literally the skull moved out of the eyes, like just like.
Yeah, so people get knocked out like
ridiculous. But thank you so much for
Max Holloway for winning at UFC 300 the other night.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So a vicious punch. You got some really good commenters here too. I'm finally starting to read some people. There's
Zeke's
good. Zeke's in there.
Yeah, we have, like I said, we have a very good, loyal fan base here, and I appreciate it. And so thank you again. I'm really sorry for being a little profanity laced. That's normally like not like me, but I've seen some things in the last couple of weeks. I'm just like, I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore. I just can't. I can't do it anymore because what bridge do I? I've built bridges. I've built towns. I built empires and all that stuff. And I mean, I am using a lot of Sims references, but the point I'm making is that.
No, what's so funny is that you and I have had this conversation for like 8 years that eventually the Tigers are going to be watchable and all these media people are going to like horn back in here and like try to talk like they know what they're talking about after we've been in the grind here, covering Lakeland when there's no one down there. I also wanted to mention Kristen Stewart is, I believe, playing Mexican League baseball.
Yeah. So there you go. With Dawel Lugo.
One of five Tigers. Was it Jonathan Scopes?
Time goes by so fast. He's 30. He's 30 years old now. Kristen Stewart,
wow.
That was the draft pick they got from letting Max Scherzer go.
Yep.
And here's the final question for the evening, by the way. This is a good one. What are your opinions on the Tigers potentially moving to prep-heavy draft strategy, given Mark Conner stays with San Diego? That's a very good question, Jordan. It's already happening now.
Yeah. I am all for it, as I watch Jackson Merrill hitting 350 in the big leagues and James Wood hitting 600-foot home runs in AAA. And, And Robert Gasser is like a top 100 prospect. They absolutely murdered that draft class.
Yeah. And then, I mean, just look no further than Mark Elias and everything he's ever done. So, I mean, you just, we all know this. You can't, after the first round, it's just really hard to find college talent that is really got the potential to pop. Like, everybody knows their data. Everybody knows, their power potential. Everybody knows all that. So if you're going to steal anything, you got to steal them young.
Yeah.
That sounds, sus, but anyway.
No, it's true. It's in life and in baseball.
I mean, and what I loved about that strategy is that they didn't like sit there like, how much are we going to need to get all these guys? They just took everybody they wanted and figured, we'll figure it out. If they want to, if they blow us off because we're offering $400,000 and want to go to college, fuck them. We'll just take as many as we like and make it work. That's a good strategy to me. Top three or four rounds, go some college, fine. But
Yeah, the Cole Keith. I mean, take the attitude Cole Keith had about college. Screw college. He knew better.
I can get A's and play an hour less baseball a week, or I can get B's and C's and play baseball full time. I'm gonna play baseball full time. That's the kid who knew what he wanted to do. I wish I had that kind of clarity. Tell you the truth.
He made the right choice, I would say.
Yeah, he did for sure.
Walter Jenkins is better than Max Clark.
Walker Jenkins.
I kind of like Walter Jenkins a lot too, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he's got one plate appearance this year. He ran into a center field wall, as all twin center fielders do. That was a generational top five of the draft. We'll see what happens with all of them. But we've already seen, like, Paul Skeens looks absolutely ridiculous.
Dylan Cruz is finally hitting too.
Dylan Cruz is warming up. Langford's already in the big leagues.
Clark just needs to get the roller going, get those forearms built up, kid. You'll be fine.
Just throughout that draft, even like Matt Shaw is burning through the minors. There's a ton. Paul Wilson's doing okay. Jacob Wilson? I'm sorry. There's just a great draft, and we'll see what happens. But like I said, this could be 2005. It could be where everybody's good, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a lot to like for sure.
On that note, okay. And then Devin needs to be used with the final comment of the night. I hope we just didn't draft Tony Mandarich. That's a good reference right there. Chris, do you remember the Tony Mandarich?
Tony Mandarich. Yeah. Was he like the Green Bay pick?
Yeah.
Number two. And then they missed on, was that the Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, Troy Aikman year?
I don't think it was. I think it was the year before that. Or maybe it was. I don't remember.
Let me look at it. I'm looking.
You look that up real quick. So while we wrap
there,
it up.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Oof. All right. That's a good comp then. 1989 draft. First overall, Troy Aikman. Second, Tony Mandarich. Third, Barry Sanders. Four, Derek Thomas. Ooh. Five, Deion Sanders. So you've got four Hall of Famers and Tony Mandarich.
Oh, man. That's a bad look. That's rough.
Yeah. It's a buffet. Yeah. All right. For some reason, I thought it was like an 80. I thought Mandarich was maybe 88, but not 89. But so thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Everybody's chiming in on the Mandarich. Yes, it was the same draft. We appreciate it. I didn't realize the amount of football talent we have in here. That's awesome. So thank you, everybody, for helping us out on that. Thank you so much for listening. Again, thank you for putting up with my rant. And you can find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to. And, of course, you can find us on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. We're probably going to split this pod into two, splitting the levels for tomorrow on the audio side of things. So we'll be back next week. Same time, about 9 o'clock on a Monday night after the Tigers game. Thank you again. I cannot stress to you I apologize for the rant a little bit there. It was just
all me. It won't be the last time we're swearing about Max Clark, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. About Max Clark, and we'll be swearing about something else.
Or the Tigers, or possibly Max Tacaputo.
Yeah.
Okay,
97.1.
Yeah, 248. Okay, all right. We're out of here. We'll see you next week. Have a good week, everybody.